And now,
the definition.
So let me get right to it. The end of history was written 30 years ago in... it came out in the summer. Well, actually, it's 30 and a half years, more like 31 years. It was published in June of 1989. I was in the State Department at the time, so it was before the fall of the Berlin Wall. And I have now spent 31 years being asked, well, what about the end of history? You know, wasn't that completely wrong? And, you know, and it, this didn't start recently. I mean, this started virtually the moment I published that piece. So I just want to get a couple of things out, just so there's not any misunderstanding. The end of history was not my phrase. It comes from the philosopher Hegel. History, in his understanding, is what we would today call modernization or development. And end did not mean termination. It meant objective, you know, target. And so the question of the end of history is, where does the modernization process lead to? What's the highest form of human social and political organization? And what I said was, the Marxists, for the last 150 years, have been saying the end of history is going to be communism. And my observation in really the summer of 1988 or the winter of 1988-89, when Gorbachev was reforming the Soviet Union, was that it didn't look like we would get there, that we would stop at the stage before communism, which the Marxists called bourgeois democracy. And I didn't see a higher form of society that would replace liberal democracy. All right, so that was the thesis. So people keep asking me, do I still believe it? I believe it in the following form. I have not heard anyone posit an alternative political economic form other than liberal democracy tied to a market economy that I think will be a higher form of human civilization that will produce higher levels of prosperity and more happiness for the people that live in it. The only alternative that I think is a serious one is actually the one that the Chinese have been developing, because it's definitely not democratic, and it's been quite successful economically. And I've always said right from the beginning that, you know, another 20 years or so, if they're richer than the United States and they're still stable and it looks like it's an ongoing enterprise, then I'll admit I was wrong. There really is an alternative, and that may be it. But I don't really, I have reasons for thinking that may not be the case. Now, if you fast forward 30 years, obviously we're living in a very different period. We're not expanding the world democracies anymore the way we were in 1989. And in fact, we've been in a period of setback. It's taken two forms. So one is the rise of Russia and China, authoritarian regimes that are very aggressive and self-confident. And the other form is the rise of populism in the United States, in Britain, in Hungary, in Poland, in Italy, in any number of other countries. The problem with populism is it's not democracy, because these populist leaders are legitimately elected by the people. The problem is that they almost always attack the liberal part of liberal democracy, meaning the constitutional order, checks and balances, the rule of law. They don't like anything that gets in the way of their implementation of the people's, so-called people's will. And that includes, unfortunately, my president, Donald Trump, who, the moment he came into office, set about trying to undermine all of the institutions in the United States that limit executive power. And I think a lot of us in the U.S. are really scared of what's going to happen if this guy gets reelected in November, because he's going to feel that the American people really have given him a mandate to keep doing what he's doing in a way that really doesn't know any kinds of bounds, institutional bounds. And this has already happened in Hungary. I mean, it's going on in any number of other countries. And that, I think, is the other big danger that we face. Now, I just want to say, so I want to connect The End of History and The Last Man to my latest book, Identity, just to point out that there is actually some continuity there. By the way, people keep asking me, have you ever considered rewriting the end of history and the last man? And my answer is, I've done it already. I have a two-volume book that runs to about 1,200 pages called The Origins of Political Order and then Political Order and Political Decay. And that basically is my rewriting of the end of history and the last man. And there are some important differences in my perspective, because in the latter two volumes, I talk about political decay, that societies can go backwards as well as going forwards. And I think I appreciate better how hard it is to create a modern impersonal state and so forth. So if you're interested in that, I would send you to those books. But the last book, Identity, has a lot of continuity with the end of history and the last man. The last man in the title of the book comes from the philosopher Nietzsche. And he said that at the end of history, the last man will appear. The last man is a man without a chest, with no pride or anger or aspiration, because all of his needs have been taken care of. You know, he has peace and security and prosperity. And people are going to rebel against this. And I said this in the end of history and the last man, talking about future threats to democracy, that people want to struggle. And if their society doesn't give them things to struggle against that are just, they're going to struggle for unjust things. And that this was a perpetual challenge. I mentioned Donald Trump back in that original book. At that time, I thought that one of the advantages of a capitalist economic system was that these fantastically ambitious people like Trump could be satisfied just by making a lot of money. And that would bleed off all their energy, and then that would keep the political system safe from, you know, a new Julius Caesar. And little did I know that he actually failed as a businessman. He went bankrupt twice. So then he goes into reality TV and becomes a reality TV star. And in order to get the recognition, which is the real driver behind Identity, he runs for president, and now we're stuck with him. But the important concept that was embedded there is something based on this Greek word thumos. Thumos is a part of the human psychology that demands respect and recognition. And if you do not get respect or recognition, you get angry. So in modern Greek, as I understand it, the word thumos still exists, and it means anger. And I think a lot of politics, modern politics, is actually about a struggle for recognition, that people don't just want peace and security and prosperity. They want respect and dignity. They want the public recognition of that dignity. And I think what's happened in the last few years is that globalization has produced a large class of people in many countries that do not feel respected. It's been great for elites, you know, the kind of people that go to the Munich Security Conference and are cosmopolitan and well-connected to the global economy. But there's a lot of people that have less education. Their jobs have been taken away as a result of outsourcing and downsizing and so forth. And they're really pretty unhappy that the elites really don't take them very seriously, don't even recognize their struggles. And I think a lot of populism has arisen because of this thumos, you know, this anger at non-recognition. And what these populist politicians do is they feed on that, and they are able to blame foreigners, whether foreign competitors or immigrants, working together with the elites that have structured the game against them. And that's really what, you know, I think is undermining our liberal democracy right now. And so I think that that's the kind of dilemma we're in, that people don't just want peace and prosperity, they also want respect, and our system doesn't give it to them. There are lots of groups that really don't get that. On the left, you know, they tend to be identity groups like, you know, racial minorities, immigrants, women, gays and lesbians. On the right now, we're seeing basically the old majority white working class rising up and saying, well, what about us? You know, you're paying all this attention to women and blacks and gays and so forth, but what about us ordinary people? We're not getting respect either. And that's the, you know, the unfortunate kind of polarization that we're seeing now. So that, you know, is a way of tying together the first book I wrote and the latest book I wrote, because they're actually dealing with the same, in many ways, with the same phenomenon. I'm not going to make any predictions about how this is all going to end up. I tend to think that people have gotten a little bit too pessimistic about the prospects for democracy, because people really don't like living in authoritarian countries, and we've seen that, you know, in Georgia, in Ukraine, in Sudan, in Algeria, in Nicaragua, in Hong Kong, in a lot of other places. And so I think that there's still, you know, this hunger for a kind of just and free order. But getting to that, as I put it in another book, getting to Denmark is not that easy. And I think that that's where we've fallen down. So I'll just stop with that.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother Bobby and Deez. Welcome to this Class War Betterville podcast episode. So, this is probably going to be one of my last live recorded episodes. I have other ones that I've done. And what I mean by live is that I'm recording it basically the week or maybe 2 weeks prior to releasing it. I have other episodes, things from last year, 2020, things from this year, that I will be dropping. I'm just waiting for the right time to do those things, to drop those things, and basically waiting for the energy to feel right to put those out. For instance, I have this couple of, I think there's two parts to this one, which deals with comparing the U.S. to the Roman Republic and the fall of the Roman Republic. I have an addendum to my intergenerational warfare episode, two-part episode from last year. I have that, that's still sitting there. This actually may end up being part of another episode, which I've recorded about the Lincoln Project, and have been waiting to release that, but I have others, and again, just sitting on them. A couple of them I haven't decided if I'm going to release yet. For instance, I have two segments... that are rather long from last year's primary season. One of them I recorded right before the pandemic really hit over here, and it discusses a David Brooks piece from the New York Times. Another one is about unions and what unions should be, not what they typically are now. And then I have other stuff that I've just recorded throughout the first 4 or 5 months of this year. So, you know, I'm still figuring out which ones I'm going to release, but I do have a number of them already picked out, specifically the ones that I listed earlier. Anyway, that all said, there's still going to be more content to come before I am completely done. I have recorded, ironically, the last episode, which I haven't edited it yet, but I was going to release that actually in March, around the solstice. So what I'll probably do is try to have this wrapped up by this autumn, so I can release it around that solstice. But we'll see. As you can tell, this episode is about the midterms. The midterms. And I'm hearing people say constantly that they are worried, they are worried, they are worried, they are worried about the midterms. And they should be. And the reason they should be is because mass media is really making a play right now toward having the midterms go absolutely, absolutely horribly. Mass media is making a play to have the midterms go absolutely horribly. And I know they are, because I'm hearing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I've been hearing the same thing over and over and over again since last December. It stopped briefly after January 6th because that freaked mainstream media out. But right after Joe Biden was inaugurated, I started hearing the same narrative repeat itself over and over and over and over and over. And that narrative goes like this. Tell me if you haven't heard this one. Well, traditionally speaking, going back to the 1960s, the party in power in the White House typically loses seats in the Congress during the midterm elections. Yes. Typically, that is indeed true. I think it was in the early 50s where the trend was bucked and the Democrats actually gained seats. But typically, yes, that is true. Now, the reason they do not bring up the idea that in the 1950s, the trend was bucked. And actually, no, I don't believe it couldn't have been in the 50s, because that was Eisenhower, and so that would have actually tracked with the school of thinking was. There was a time period, and maybe it was the 40s, and I'm sorry, I should have probably looked this up, but there's a year, it's either the 40s or 50s, where the, or even the 60s, where the Democratic Party bucked the trend. And I think it was the 60s, now that I think about it. It's either the 60s or the late 40s or the early 50s. Anyway, it bucked the trend. The reason why they don't want to talk about that is because mainstream media is really desperately trying to go back to a everything is fine here, don't pay attention to the bubbling problems in the society. I get it, yes. CNN, MSNBC are doing a lot of stuff that is kind of like this faux pas, social justice, you know, we care about these issues, blah, blah, blah. These people don't really care about those issues, but whatever. They're faking it because they have to. Their lunch is getting eaten by social media and YouTube, which is why YouTube is pushing heavily on what they call authoritative sources, CNN, MSNBC being the authoritative sources. They don't want to admit that there is a generation shift happening, and that everything that they have believed to be true has been tossed out by millennials and what I call Generation E, but they call Generation Z. I will never call these people Generation Z because Zoomer means nothing. The E comes from Gary Marx's book. The only book that I've ever found that he actually wrote. Marx, not as in Karl Marx, by the way. His name is actually Gary Marx. And he called this generation, the coming generation that was after the millennials, he called them Generation E for equilibrium. This generation was going to be seeking solutions based on equilibrium. And so he coined that. I like it. I'm keeping it. Because Generation Z, one, it sounds like Generation Zombie. Two, it sounds like the last generation, which isn't a really good concept that you want to be floating. And if we want to get into Greeks and what those letters meant, you know, you can do your research on Zeta and all the rest. But they don't want to acknowledge that this is happening, because now, if they had to acknowledge it, if they had to acknowledge this change, that means for most of these people now in their 50s, who have gotten ahead by doing all the right things, and by all the right things, I mean they've usually been the person that could answer all the questions because all they did was absorb information and parrot it back to people. They didn't critically think about anything. And if they did start to critically think, the institutions which they went into knocked that critical thinking out of them as quick as they developed it. These people are now having to look at their lives and, you know, they're 50, 55, 60 years old and realizing, you know, I've kind of wasted my professional life, my professional vitality. And they don't want to admit that. They do not want to admit it. Moreover, the bosses in this country do not want the trend bucked. Because the bosses, the people who are the wealthiest in this country, they are desperately trying to hold off what they consider a progressive agenda. What they are looking at, constantly is not just a progressive agenda, but a true democratic socialist agenda. They do not want it. They've been fighting against it for 50 years, and they are looking at a generation that is looking overseas and saying, they can do this. Why can't we? And they know if the trend is bucked in 2022, that by that trend being bucked, you now are establishing a historical current. A historical current that says, oh, the Democrats got more seats when they were supposed to lose more seats. More progressives went to the Congress than was supposed to go to Congress, both in from 2018 to 2020, now 2022. We have a problem now. That means history, which was declared over by Fukuyama, I believe is his name, back in the late 80s. History is now bucking trends and starting a new current in the 2020s. Uh-oh. The generation, which was called the slacker generation, is suddenly asserting itself. Did you hear what I just told you? The generation, which was called the slacker generation, is now asserting itself not only by its votes, but by the votes of its children, who are saying, no more. No more. The way you've been doing things is cut off. We are now setting a new trend. This is their fear. Because once that power starts to gather, it becomes too big to stop. Why? You're seeing it right now, actually. Recently, Israel was bombing and killing dozens of Palestinians each day. This was done in 2014, and there was a handful of people who were in the minority who were saying Israel is wrong. Israel is an apartheid state. Israel is committing genocidal activities right now. They need to stop, and if they don't stop, then something needs to be done to force them to stop. What does that mean? The UN needs to get up off its butt and send troops in there to stop them from doing what they're doing. Now, people didn't want to say that, but there was an undercurrent of it. And of course, the UN, which is a colonialist institution, needs to really be gutted and restarted so it could actually stand up for the rights of humanity. If you don't believe me, look at the history of who started the UN and why. There's a lot of potential, there's a lot of possibilities there in the UN that have never been realized because it was really put up there to perpetuate colonialism during an age when colonialism was degenerating. Continuing though, 2014, Israel bombed and killed dozens of Palestinians, and very few people said anything about it, at least people with a large megaphone. Well, it's 2022, y'all. 8 years later. Basically two presidential terms later. And Israel was torn apart by young people who listened in 2014 and didn't have the wherewithal to speak up because they didn't understand back then that the grown-ups in the room weren't going to do what was right. Once they figured out that the grown-ups weren't going to do what was right, took them a while. They said, nope, no more. And that's actually what happened with Greta Thunberg. So there is a push to make sure that the vote is suppressed in 2022, both from the right and from the left. Yes, you heard me, you heard me, you heard me. The right is doing it legally. They're passing laws to suppress the vote. The left is doing it by constantly putting out this narrative that they're going to lose seats in 2022. When I watch periodically pieces on MSNBC where they constantly talk about it and CNN where they constantly talk about the Democrats losing seats in 2022, I know what they're doing. They're setting it up so they can then go back to, oh, well, the Republicans are so bad. Now we need to come out and we need to show up for 2024. Now the base of power is shifted back to them. Now, you may say to me, and rightfully so, wait a minute, you said left wing. You just gave me corporate news broadcasters, and you're pretty much comparing them to what the Republicans are doing on the ground. Ladies and gentlemen, I did that to prove a point. They're at the center of all this. They're at the center of all this. It's not just right-wing people watching the news. It's also left-wing people. Now, I'm watching left-wing people on YouTube who are saying the same thing. And they're using history as a backdrop. Moreover, they are encouraging people to find incredible fault with the left, with left-wing candidates, whether they're from the Greens or they're from the Democratic Party, people who are, you know, progressives and trying to run in the Democratic Party. They are encouraging people to find so much disgust and disdain with them that they are guaranteeing a loss in 2022. So then these people can come forward and say, well, see, now, if we had just ran these candidates, they would have won. Here's the problem. These folks do not understand the time that they're in. And it's frustrating to me. Because while there's a lot of people who need to be criticized in the Democratic Party, these people aren't turning their ire and their fire towards the people who are actually stopping progress. They're turning their ire and fire towards the people who are trying to orchestrate it. I've always been surprised, and I'm less surprised now by this, that so many progressives spend so much time beating up on the squad. And yet, they typically live in, not always, but most progressives, a lot of progressives that I see on YouTube, save for a couple of them that live outside of the United States, they live in districts with milquetoast Democratic candidates who are congresspeople there. And yet, they have nothing to say about these people. So these folks are essentially guaranteeing a loss in 2022. And that is the problem, because they are they're disincentivizing hundreds of thousands of voters, because these people reach that many people, especially young voters. Now, I get it. Most of these people, and I've stated this before, I don't mean to be cruel or mean about it, but most of these commentators are doing it for clicks. They're not actually doing the work to educate themselves so they can be up on real systemic politics and, you know, how does the system actually work. Most of these people have never read a book on congressional policy, on the actual process of making legislation. I have seen none of them take up the initiative to actually teach people about these things. I wish they would. There's a couple of people who I have in mind who, you know, maybe I'll suggest that they do that, because I think they'd be good at it. But most of them are doing this for a living. And we are now at a time period where the people who are commentating on this stuff, you have to become committed to producing results. The one thing that I can say about conservatives is they are committed to producing results. Conservatives do not start off with the idea that they are a minority. They start off with the idea that they have the majority opinion, and then they work to convince people that indeed they have the majority opinion. Progressives work on the assumption that they're always going to be on defense, and that most people are not going to listen to them. I'm going to tell you, I had a conversation recently with somebody who was a dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter, hated Barack Obama because he was a Kenyan Muslim, hated Kamala Harris because she doesn't have a legitimate right to be there in the White House, couldn't stand Joe Biden because he's a tool of the socialist left. And I talked with this person for a good, maybe 40 minutes. And I didn't give a damn if they believed me. That wasn't why I talked to him. I talked to him to constantly knock down their way of thinking. And to show that at the end of the day, if you're going to come at me with the ideas that you clearly pick up from people who are just pouring crap into your head and asking you to vomit it out into the world, I'm going to call it what it is, okay?
The fact of the matter is, most of these left-wing sites, particularly on YouTube, most of these channels, they have the potential to change hearts and minds. Now, I actually think they're right. I think in the final analysis, in the white community, they are a minority. I've said that already. And I mean that. But, and this is the important part, the number of people that they need to turn out in each district, that they need to overwhelm the GOP, is equal to most of their subscriber bases. If they give information which demotivate, no, wrong word, demobilizes, there we go. I was going to say demobilizes, but not that word. I was going to say something else. Anyway, demobilizes, if they give out information that demobilizes people who are listening to their podcasts and to their channels, what they end up doing is handing on a silver platter congressional seats which they should have rightfully won. Progressives, particularly white progressives, need to get up off the bench. For the first time in modern history, you have people all over this country working on the grassroots to prop up the grass, to push up the grass, to make the grass active, to make sure that the people who they want in office goes into Congress. It is now the job of people who have channels, people who have podcasts, things like that, to convince the grassroots, those grass blades that feel like, oh, well, this isn't really worth it, because historically, I mean, I keep looking at CNN and MSNBC who are saying that historically Democrats lose seats, and trust me, it's only going to get worse as the next year goes on. Oh, it's going to get really, really, really bad. It's your job to convince these people that those people who have been wrong about so much are wrong again this time. It is your job to say to them, these are the same people that told you that going into Iraq was going to be a cakewalk, didn't they? Didn't they tell you that? These are the same people who told you that deregulating all of those banks and letting them buy up all them homes and do those CD swaps, that was going to be fine and that was going to work out fine for everybody. Aren't those the same people who said that? Yeah. Uh-huh. Aren't they the ones who told you that Donald Trump couldn't win? Aren't they the same ones who said, you know, the institutions were going to stop Donald Trump from doing horrible, horrible harm to this country? These people have been wrong on so many things over the last 20 years, and yet we're going to let them lead us now into this? No. We're going to leave them with egg on their face again. So now they got to start actually looking at us and talking to us. This is the job of progressive commentators. Grow people into the realm of belief. Let them believe that this is achievable, because I'm telling you what, it is achievable. It is achievable. Get people pissed off and motivated. You want more progressives? I keep hearing all these progressive commentators saying, oh, well, we have the majority of the people. Yes, with black and brown and red and yellow people, you are in the majority. Get the people on your side pissed off enough to show up. Do you understand that you could sweep? You could sweep the midterms? Think about this. Think about the headline. Think about the headline. If the Democrats add, let's say, they're supposed to lose, let's say, 15 seats. Let's say they say, okay, well, Democrats are going to lose 15 seats. The Democrats don't only not lose those 15 seats, but they gain 30. Now that you say to me, oh, that's impossible, that's impossible. The Democrats used to control the House by a margin larger than that. You guys might really want to wake up and check your history. The Democrats used to actually control the House by a margin much longer, larger than that. I mean, it was for a short period of time, but it happened. But again, imagine the headlines. 2022, Democrats are supposed to lose 15 seats. But instead of losing those 15, they hold on to them. And they gain 30 more. Completely bloodying the nose of Republicans. But out of that 30 that goes to Congress, in some very unlikely places, you get progressive candidates. And out of that 30, let's shoot for the stars. Let's say 20 of them are progressive. What then is the headline the day after that occurs in 2022? Think about that. Think about that. Think about the wave that that creates in history. This is now the reset. That's what people are going to be talking about. Is this a reset of history? Now, let's add to that. Let's say the Democratic Party picks up 5 or so gubernatorial mansions that they hadn't held before. And these are progressive. Well, let's say 4 out of 5 or even 3 out of 5 are progressive. Let's say they pick up 8 legislatures, which they hadn't controlled before. And there is a huge wave of progressive candidates moving into those seats throughout the country. And let's say they narrowed up several other legislative chambers where they weren't thought to have that opportunity. And in the Senate, they widened their margin by 4. And because with those new 4 senators, now D.C. is going to become a state, and maybe Puerto Rico. Think about what those headlines are going to say the next day. Now they're not talking just about a blue wave. They're talking about a reset of history. They're talking about the beginning of a progressive era. And you know who did it? You did. Instead of following what the mainstream media is telling you to do, which is to say, historically, this has happened. Historically, this has happened. You now have created your own narrative, and you've created your own history. And who is there looking like fools? The traditional media. The traditional media. All because you took the initiative to build the energy that was necessary to make that happen, not 1 year before, but 18 months before. This is the time period where you need to be building the narratives that will make that truth happen. Again, I ask you, I want you to really, guys, if anybody who has a YouTube channel is hearing this, I really want you to think about that. And I want you to propel that. I want you to put that into the minds of the people who are listening to you. What would be the reaction? What would be the headline the next day? Heck, even that night after that occurs. What would be the headline? Now, look. Is it possible that that doesn't happen? Is it possible that they lose seats? Absolutely. But in 2018, while it was well expected that the Democrats would win seats, nobody thought that the seats won would be the seats that they did win. We are at a crux of history, guys. Just like Joe Biden isn't acting like anybody in their right mind would have thought Joe Biden would have acted. You should not expect events predicted before to occur just because that's what has happened in the past. In 1986, who said that in 4 years the USSR, particularly the wall, would be no more? Not many people. Not many people. Who said, who thought that in 1994 the Republicans would take back the House? Nobody. Nobody. Well, nobody's saying that progressives will take back the House either. Nobody is saying right now that progressives will grow their lead in 2022 and shift the power in the Democratic Party towards them. Nobody is saying that. Well, you know something? I am. I am, and you need to be saying it too. Stop being afraid of your own shadow. This is another difference between progressives, particularly white progressives, and white conservatives. Conservatives are not afraid of winning. I heard Blue Gal say this a while ago from the Professional Left podcast. Progressives are afraid to win. I hear her now 6 months later. I am afraid of the midterms. Because you're afraid of winning. Stop it. Get into the mindset of, yes, yes, there's some fear there. Because now we have a chance to mold the planet. And now move beyond that. Black people had a lot of fear doing what we had to do back in the 60s and 70s. But we got beyond it because it needed to be done. We need you now, as a black man, I'm speaking to you. I need you to grow up. I need you to mature. I need you to get beyond that fear. If you ain't got a church and you need one, find one. Heck, if there ain't one, start one. If you need a group, start it. But it's time to grow. It's time to mature. It's time to move beyond the fear. So we can start building a better society, because there's going to be challenges coming up. You can feel it in the air. You can feel it in the air. And trust me when I tell you, if my feeling is correct and progressives do win more seats, the Democrats do win more seats in both the House and the Senate in 2022, they take more gubernatorial mansions. They eke out some major wins in legislative bodies across the country and tighten up the margins that Republicans have in some of those states. You think conservative corporatist Republicans are mad now? You think they're desperate now? Whew. Y'all don't know yet. Ooh, y'all don't know yet. So stop being afraid of your shadows. Stop being afraid of your shadows. Winning is not something to be afraid of. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. Like I said, this is probably one of the last few live ones that I'm going to produce. But I will still answer any questions you have. I'm your brother, Vyamir Deese. Until the next one, peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun.